Welcome back to the Special Ed Strategist podcast, where we bridge learning gaps and empower families to access the special education services they need. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and I'm thrilled to kick off season 3 with you. Our podcast is your go-to resource for special education, offering expert insights, inspiring stories, and actionable tips to help your child thrive. In this season, we'll dive deeper into the world of special education. So whether you're a parent, educator, or passionate advocate, join us in this journey. To make this season unforgettable, please like, listen, and subscribe on your favorite podcast platform. Your support helps us reach more families and create a stronger, more inclusive future. So hit that subscribe button, join our community, and let's make season 3 a game changer. Thanks to listeners like you. Kelly, welcome to the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I really am enjoying, or looking forward, I should say, to our conversation because you have a different perspective as a parent being thrown into the world of special education, and you will be such a beacon for other parents that are listening that are new to the world of special education or thinking about being new to the world of special education. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me and also for the space that you are creating with this podcast and beyond and all of your other resources. As I was listening to and going down the rabbit hole of all of your resources, it is such a relief to see things that are like, here is real information, but also presented in a way that feels empowering because it feels like, oh, I get how to do that. So that's exciting.
Yeah. And I've shared this on my podcast as well, that I'm a mama of 3 and my middle son has medical needs. And so my background is in special education, but when I had to go and sit on the side of the table as a parent, it was so incredibly overwhelming. And I thought, it's overwhelming for me. And I know what's happening. I know the documents, I know the language, I know the process, I know it, but when it's your baby and you have this fear and love, it's a whole different ball of wax.
It is. And I've had that exact conversation with people who have spent their careers in special education, with doctors, whether it's a neurologist or a pediatrician, who have said like, oh, I was thought I had this all figured out because of my medical training. And then when it's your kid, it's very different. And we are all coming into this from a place of all of a sudden, there is so much we need to know yesterday. And it's all being thrown at us at once. And I feel like we need to acknowledge that, like, that's a lot.
That is a lot. And you're absolutely right. And I remember just the first time hearing everything that would need to take place for my son. And it is very overwhelming because it's like, where do you start? And if you don't have a stable of resources to pull from, if you're not in that world, it's like, okay, who do I talk to first? How do I prioritize? And then even just at an IEP, not just at an IEP meeting, but further down the road, when you're looking at goals and future independence and education and employment, and you're thinking, oh my gosh, this is my little one, where do I start? It becomes overwhelming. So this is where you come in. You have a great resource that you have produced, but it was out of your own need. Is that correct?
That is correct. My book is, it's called Everything No One Tells You About Parenting a Disabled Child, Your Guide to the Essential Systems, Services, and Supports, which is the longest book title in the world, but cool. It has taken me a decade to get to the point when I feel like, okay, but we got a handle on this. My son, I have 2 amazing kiddos. My 10-year-old has multiple disabilities. So, you know, branches out medical, behavioral, cognitive, fine motor, gross motor, sensory, like he's just going to check all the boxes. And I'm weirdly good at the paperwork and the planning and the figuring out. And as I was writing this book, I was literally taking notes for myself. And I'm like, oh, that's how to get the reimbursement from the insurance company. And then it worked. And I was like, oh, look, here's a check. It came out of me needing this for myself, and myself 10 years ago desperately needed this. And also from that, like, I don't want to overstate, but like rage over all of the systems that are so unequal. Access to information is unequal. I check a lot of demographic boxes that mean my kid gets more stuff. I'm a white lady who speaks English, and the statistics are there that therefore my kid gets more stuff, and that's not okay. And how do we make foundation of information accessible to everyone? Because if every single person can come into the specialist's office, the social worker's office, the IEP meeting, the school, the financial planning piece, if we can come in with an amount of not only knowledge, but confidence, even to say, I don't have all the answers, but you do. So I am going to have the confidence to ask you the questions. And now I might not know the answers, but I know what questions to ask to best support my child.
Yes. And what I also realized to kind of build on that is that our medical world and our academic world and every other related services act in silos. And so it is very often that the medical and the educational teams are boop, boop, boop. People can't see my hands, but you know what I'm saying, that they're just doing their, staying in their lane. Mm-hmm. And then it becomes very overwhelming as a parent, because now you're quarterbacking everything and everybody on top of being a parent and holding a job and taking care of the household and any other siblings, and then having those conversations with both or multiple teams and trying to get everybody on the same page of this and that. So through your journey, what have you found to make that feel a little less overwhelming and stressful?
I love there's so much to unpack in everything that you said. And I literally was getting anxious as you're saying it, because I'm like, yes, I'm doing all of that. So to answer your question, first is just validating this feeling of like, yep, I'm overwhelmed. And it doesn't mean like, buck up, cheer up, have a different mindset. Like, no, this is hard. Like, it's not as easy. Like, I've got a great mindset. My kids are awesome and hilarious and wonderful. But for me, there was such a shift in just declaring, which we all need to do, that caregiving is a job.
Yeah.
That is in addition to parenting. When you are a parent caregiver, as I am, that is for me and for many, that is a full-time job that will last for forever. This job will not go away ever in my life. There is no training for this. There's no warning that it's coming in my case. And nobody is like, oh, cool. So here's how you do all the things. And for me, even before I realized like, oh, this is a job and this is why the stuff is hard, my kid's personality and who he is as a human and disability in general, like that's not the hard. There's some medical stuff that can be very hard. In our house, epilepsy can be very hard, but kind of separating the job so that he understands when I'm like pulling my hair out, it's because of all the forms for the IEP. It's not because of him. Like, he's awesome. Let's stand in the driveway and watch airplanes for an hour and a half, because that's what we do. But saying, okay, if this is a job, I need to educate myself and I need to set up systems to make this sustainable. Because for so many of us, the job, of course, will change and evolve. For some, it becomes more intensive. For some, it becomes less intensive. But for me, how can I set up systems so that I am ready for the IEP? I am ready for the annual social services, everything, all of this paperwork and planning. It's never going to be like, wow, this is fun. I love doing this. But it can be easier. It can take less time. We can spend less money trying to figure all of this out. And we really have to start with where we are and what are the systems we need to put in place.
Let me just go right back for 1 second before we jump into some of these systems. And holding space for yourself as a parent that is in this caregiving role. And I like how you delineate between caregiving and parenting. I do remember when the journey started with our son, and we were trying to figure everything out and speaking to, I don't know if it was the oncologist or somebody, and one of the physicians was like, well, you still have to parent. And that is like, you're right, because you're in this delicate situation that you're trying to balance. And so, yes, it's caregiving, it's parenting, it gets messy. As a parent that's been through this, what advice or what's something you could share to a friend? I'm trying to think of how to word this, right? So you get this understanding of your own child, but then you have your personal friends and family that are in your lives. Is there something that you have learned through this process that you've been able to articulate to them so they say, okay, I better understand where you are? Because it is, like I said, it's hard and it's messy and it's beautiful and it's all of those things. But I think if you're not in it, you don't necessarily, you have empathy and you can support a friend, but you may not understand where to start with that. Does that make sense?
That not only does that make sense, but that is a huge and often very emotional question to which there's no easy answer. I had absolutely no idea before I was in this world. So I too was in that position of like, I don't know, can I buy you coffee? Cool. By the way, yes, buy them coffee. Just because part of what's so tricky is what is comfortable or perhaps even safe emotionally or even physically is there are different conversations that you can have with different people. And you will realize, hopefully quickly, there are new boundaries you need to set. Some people are not good for your mental health, and they are not comfortable with this. And I have found myself, and so many others have echoed this, managing the fragile emotions of others about my child and his disability and what a tragedy this is. And like, give me a break. Any parent, and especially a parent who is figuring out disability, doesn't need to manage your emotions. They need you to say, hey, I don't know what to say. And I often tell people, it's okay to say, I don't know what to say, but I want to be here for you. Can I buy you a coffee? Can I? Somebody posted this on Facebook recently, and it literally brought me to tears. They said, ask if you can come to their house and unload all of their medical supplies from the monthly delivery. And I'm like, if someone came and did that, I don't know what I would do other than just be thrilled. Tell people it's okay to not know, but also every time you see me or my kid, if you give me that, oh, you poor thing, look, that makes everything worse. And that tells me that you are not a person who is good for my mental health. So now I'm not going to tell you things. I'm not going to call you when I'm having a hard day. I'm also not going to call you when I'm like, my kid just said a word. I'm pretty sure this is amazing. You don't have to have the answers, but be willing to sit with people and not project your emotions onto them. Don't say, congratulations, your child is disabled. Isn't this amazing? Because that might not be their emotion. And then they're feeling shamed because they're not excited because they don't know which way is up. And don't say, oh my gosh, this is, I don't know how you, I wouldn't know how to do this. How are you going to do this? This is terrible. I'm so sorry. Because they might just be thinking, like, tell me my baby has amazing hair. That's it. Like, that's all we're dealing right now is like his amazing hair. Cool. The managing everyone else has been honestly one of the hardest parts of the journey for me. Because everybody is telling me, like, here's the emotion. And I'm like, whoa, I am still figuring this out.
That is really, and when, to your point about unloading medical devices and all of that, like, those are the simple things that aren't simple in a moment. Yeah. And it is a gift. I actually had a near dear friend of mine early on in my process say, give me the list of phone numbers and I'll make those appointments for you.
Ah.
Right. And like, it just, some days that seems overwhelming to call and be on hold and make an appointment and then try to like, look at everybody's schedule in the family and when can I get them there? And so forth. So I think that is what a wonderful gift to give to a friend or a family, that if you're not sure what to say, just, hey, I'm ready to show up. I'm going to fold your laundry. Or what part of the day is the hardest for you? Great. Yes. Midnight, fantastic. I'm going to come over. Do you want me to sit with you or do you want me to do your laundry?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Like,
yes.
Just assume the sale.
Yes. And I have two kiddos. One is disabled, one is not. And there's often been the offer of, let me take your older son out for the afternoon so you can have some time off. And I'm like, that's not time off. Actually, when he's around is additive. Like, offer to learn how to do the feeding tube in case of emergency. You know, offer to boldly step up and take care of my kid who does have a ton of support needs for an hour. Again, like, you can just stand in the driveway and watch airplanes. Like, it's cool. That's what we do. But people are so quick to say, like, oh, this is comfortable for me. And you know what? This is all uncomfortable.
It's all uncomfortable. So we're going to get uncomfortable and learn how to make this a little easier. So when we talk about setting up systems, what would be your first recommendation?
Mm-hmm. My first recommendation highlights something you just said. Some days you just can't. And that is so important. You need these systems. If today is not your day and it feels like another thing that you just want to cry at the thought of it, like, cool, not today. But there is so much you need to do. And my book, each chapter is a different topic that you can read in any order, whether it is IEPs, school, financial planning, future care plans, insurance, social services, working with your medical team, therapies. These are all places we need systems and stuff. Know that it is not going to come together this afternoon, but when you're like, I don't even know where to start, I always say pick one thing that is small, that is easy, go for the easy, where you can feel like you have a victory. If it is scheduling that appointment, be proud of yourself for scheduling that appointment. If it is getting that reimbursement from your insurance company, like, whatever the thing is where you can have a small win, just stack up your wins as much as you can. And yes, there are big things that we need to do, but there's also all of these little things that are important, and partly just for our own well-being of feeling like I can do something today, even if it's a 5-minute thing. You did a thing, and that's not nothing.
What is your plan with paperwork and organizing that component and then keeping track of what appointments come when and when to request and all of that?
Mm-hmm. Paperwork, light it all on fire. Done.
Done.
It's awful, isn't it? Like, it is just, it's the worst, and I'm good at it, and it's the worst. A simple thing that everyone can do and will take the minutes is I have reminders on my calendar. And for example, there's literally an annual reminder that's on repeat on my calendar for January, middle of January. So kids are back in school. I do it just before MLK weekend. Reminder to send the email to the assistant principal at our school who coordinates the IEP for my child. Say, this is the week we would like to have it happen. This is the time of day we would like to have it happen. Here's who will be attending from our side. We will be audio recording the meeting. And I would like to receive in advance all of relevant paperwork for us. That includes evaluations, that includes proposed goals, that includes present levels of performance, and that includes anything you want to give me that is part of our IEP. And therefore, I don't have to remember to do that. And neither does the assistant principal. I would get an email from this person eventually, and it would get put on the books. But I like to be proactive because that makes me feel better. It makes certain that this happens, and it gives everyone the advance warning. And as soon as I send that, part of the reminder is to reach out to the service providers who are not at the school in January to say, end of March, we have an IEP meeting. I need your reports and evaluations to contribute to the IEP meeting and share with the team. And everybody appreciates having that advance notice. And then I get to sit back and not chase down evaluations and reports, not wonder if I told them I was recording it, because if you don't, you're not allowed to record it. That's how it is in California, where I am. I know that's been done because there are literally bullet points in the notes of my calendar reminder. So anything you can have set up as an automatic thing is really helpful. The paperwork, decide what you actually need to keep and what you don't, and make a place for it. Even if it's a box and you're using post-it notes as dividers, if you have a fancy file cabinet and a label maker, by the way, how great are label makers? I just feel so much better when I'm like, I just made a label for that. Cool. Kid, now I can remember your name. I'm going to put this on your forehead. Today, I kept calling one of my kids by the dog's name and the dog by his name. And I was like, why is no one listening to me? Mm-hmm. So I need a label maker for everyone. How can you just set everything up so I don't have to think about where that report is from neurology? Because it's under the green post-it note. Because it's always under the green post-it note. When I get home from the neurology visit, I know where that paperwork goes, and it's not on my kitchen counter. By the way, today it's on my kitchen counter, but that's cool. We all fail sometimes. But I know exactly where it goes. And when we set up these systems for this paperwork, it takes away the cognitive labor. And I love that term, and I wish I remember where I first heard it, because that's what this is, and that is what so much of the overwhelm is my brain is constantly going, and I'm always thinking of the 200 things I need to do next, and that's exhausting.
It is exhausting, but you just empowered so many people. Please know that, because I think just the fact of, yes, you can send an email and say, hi, I'm giving you a lot of notice. This is the best day and time for me and the folks that are coming, and this is what's happening and this is what I need. And so that is an incredible tidbit of information for families to know that that is a possibility. You had mentioned present level of performance. So part of that with the IEP as a parent is to create our vision statement, right? And I've talked about this in the podcast before, the importance of a vision statement. What does that mean to you as it relates to your son's IEP?
Mm-hmm. Vision statements are not talked about enough. And I only recently, within the last, I would say, year and a half, really learned about and understood the importance of a vision statement. You know, in my book is like, here's a template for an email to write to your assistant principal to request the IEP. Here's what to tell them. And there's also an example of a vision statement. For me, the vision statement can guide the IEP. It can also guide my conversations with medical specialists, with therapists. It can guide how I am filling out the service dog application. We have a service dog. She's amazing. Even when I get her name wrong, it can guide all of the paperwork and the social services. And for me, it is, and I love that you talk about in other episodes of your podcast, when accommodations are in play, that does not mean lower expectations. And to your point of, we are not lowering our expectations, the vision statement is like, I am drawing a line in the sand of the expectations we have for my child. And frankly, a vision statement for my child with disabilities checks a lot of boxes that a vision statement for my child without disabilities would be. But for one of them, he's already checked a lot of those boxes. So we don't need that. For my son, Aaron, who's the one with disabilities, and all of this is discussed with his consent, and we talk about this and all the things, and he is loud and proud about all the things. Vision statement includes things like being a contributing member of the community with agency over his own life, relationships, living situation, employment, and or further education. Things like he will be fully literate. He will be able to perform all hygiene routines himself, including will be fully continent, which means able to use the toilet, we're still working on, will be on par gross motor and fine motor with his peers. Something that is very important in that is that he will be able to communicate with familiar and unfamiliar people. And for kids who are complex communicators like my son, and to us that means he is not having a conversation with words. He has vocalizations, gestures, some signs, and an AAC device. And that's alternative and augmentative communication device. For us, that's an iPad with a communication program. And the communicating with familiar and unfamiliar people is so important because that gives him so much autonomy in the world. When we're looking at all of this within a vision statement, I read this at the beginning of our IEP meeting. I also send it to everyone in advance of the IEP meeting of like, this is what we are working towards. It makes conversations much easier when, which has happened to us, a speech therapist who doesn't believe that my child is capable of learning AAC says we should discontinue that. And it gives me, rather than me just saying no, and them saying yes, and I'm saying no, and we're arguing, me saying, this is essential. We have agreed upon this future vision for my child, and he will not be able to communicate with unfamiliar people if he doesn't have access to all of these words. By the way, he's doing great with his device. You know, there, if they were to say, like, literacy is not a priority this year, then I say, actually, literacy is a big picture priority, as we discussed in the vision statement. And it's very empowering to have something that is strengths-based, that is focused on what my child can and will do to work towards. Because in all meetings and all things, when you are working towards something, is so much stronger than saying like, wow, I really wish my kid would use the toilet someday. It gives you a different inroad that is so empowering and space to talk about your child as the adult they will one day become. Because that's what we're all working towards.
And as a parent, you're that consistent person. Whether you're child changes teachers or schools or district, as a parent, you are that consistent person. And so vision statement or parent input statement, it depends on your area of what they call it. It's a powerful way to outline everything that you want to see for your kiddo. And I always say, you know, start with 6 months, a year, 3 years, 5 years. So you can kind of start to say, you know, sometimes starting with the big and then working backwards or vice versa.
Yep.
So how can someone with kind of that framework and what you just eloquently said, take a vision statement and translate that into actionable steps?
So number one, if you're like, wow, that sounds cool and I've crafted a vision statement, but what now and what are the actionable steps? Know that talking to members of your team, even outside of the IEP meeting, even if it's October and your meeting is not until March, talk to the team and say like, hey, this is the vision I have for my child. Can you give me ideas to make this actionable and make this concrete? And therapists, educators, medical professionals will often be able to help with that, as will other parents and other families who have been through this. I get so frustrated that we're all figuring this out from scratch, but there are a zillion people who have already figured out a lot of this, even with different diagnoses. So talk to other people. If you are inventing and reinventing this all 100% on your own, you can do it, but it's exhausting and it is so time consuming. Ask other people. Listen to a podcast like this. And I literally was writing things down from your podcast because there are so many. I hope your listeners listen to your episodes more than once because there's so much, it is so densely packed. And say, what are those things that I have in my notebook that I am just scrolling down that are committing to my memory, because you can get so much of this information from others who have done this, and you are the one that then makes it individualized to your child.
Well, thank you for being my hype person. I appreciate that.
Multiple times. Oh my gosh. That's my one thing. I'm like, okay, this, listening to an episode, I'm like, this could actually be 10 episodes. There's so much in here.
So much, yeah, for sure. But there's just, and every situation is a little bit different. So it's kind of figuring out where your situation aligns and how do you think of future independence, education, and employment, and kind of where you see your child in those situations, and then working with the team, as you said, to get to that part. What strategies can educators use to ensure that our kiddos, that their IEP goals align with that broader vision statement?
Mm-hmm. I think most educators are incredibly talented and well-meaning and overworked. That has certainly been our experience. We've had great teams. We've had not so great teams. Our team right now, we love, they're the best. And it's, you know, taken us a road to get there. With educators, come up with the goals. If that is your job today, to come up with the goals, find that balance of not underestimating the kids and put forth your best, and also discuss this with parents and families other than just that one time a year at the IEP. So many people, you know, I was talking to a friend this morning, having this conversation. The IEP is looming because it is the one time of year and here it comes and we're coming to get you. And you're sitting at a table. My husband and I are literally facing a dozen people because we have a big team who all do this for a living. And we're like, ah, this is so intimidating, even though we've done this a lot.
I say it's like walking into a party, right? So it's like a party that's well underway. Music's going, people are chatting, laughter, whatever it may be. And then I feel like when you walk into the room, everything stops and
yep.
people stare at you. And I think getting over that first part, and you're usually left with a not always comfortable chair,
yes,
but you know, you got to just, I think once you're like, all right, I'm going to walk in this room, everybody's going to stop, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent, and they're going to stare at us, and we're just going to say hello and greet everybody and start the process.
Yes. And also in that party, everything stops. And you look at each other awkwardly, and then everyone at the party starts telling you what's wrong with your kid. And you're like, wow, what happened? Like, my kid's awesome. We're good.
Ah. Yeah, can we lead with some fun stuff? Yes.
And you're like, I want to run away screaming, but I can't because the door's locked. So now I have to sit here. Like, it's bananas. The communication throughout the school year, even in little bits, even in emailing your teacher and saying, hey, can you confirm when the related services, i.e. PT or OT or speech, can you just confirm when those are being delivered? What asking your teacher, what is their preferred method of communication? Make it easy for them. Do you like to schedule a phone call? Do you like me to come in every quarter in person? Do you, texts, emails, smoke signals, like whatever the thing is, having that regular communication to just check in. A lot of times those check-ins will be the teacher saying, you are not going to believe what your kid did today. There was a sticker book and he put the stickers in and he wrote a big letter A on the front of it for Aaron, because that's his name. And how cool is that? And everything becomes less intimidating and less of that party that comes screeching to a halt when you are in regular communication throughout the school year with your team. You're not coming in thinking like, I got you, I'm going to get you on this thing. You're coming in saying, hey, tell me about my kid. Hey, I'm working on revamping the vision statement. Or if we're working towards this, like, what can we be doing? And something that I do often that people appreciate, and I'm doing it with absolute sincerity, is saying, here are the things I know my kid is working on at school, whether they're those specific goals or whether that is what the whole class is working on this month. And I say, how can I make your life easier? I am not going to be a therapist 24/7 with my kid. And some days we are just going to blow bubbles all afternoon and there will be no homework. But in those times when I am focused with him during the blowing bubbles, oh, I can be working on the language goal. I can be, you know what, while I'm making dinner, I can put the crayons in front of him. He might not want to draw, but I can have him practice holding because he doesn't have the hand strength and the fine motor dexterity, and we're working on that. And building in these tiny things also gives me something to report back to the teacher of, hey, he's holding a crayon, and it turns out it's always the green crayon before dinner every night. How cool is that? And the teacher can then say, oh my gosh, that's really helpful to know. I haven't been giving him green crayons. Just those little bits that makes you feel like a team. Some IEP teams are just tough to work with, and they do make it feel like an us versus them. And maybe you have that team, maybe you don't. But I think the overwhelming majority of teams genuinely want to be in partnership with the parents and the families. And I believe that is an ongoing process that makes the IEP meetings so much better.
Absolutely. And what I've found to be very helpful with a lot of families that I've worked with is encouraging them to reach out right in the beginning of the year, even if, so you're in an elementary school, you're in the same school, or middle school, you're in the same building, and you think, all right, well, they know my kid. But I think it's always a great reminder to just say, here are the strengths, here are the things that really work well, call me, here's every number, email, text, like letting them know this is how to reach out. And I want to do the same, asking them, how can I get a hold of you, whether it's smoke signals or however. And I think that just starts that bridge of communication of, here's a family that really wants to be a part of this. Here is the educator, whomever on the team that is, okay, yep, all right, I can text. And I have some educators or professionals that are, you know, can you text me or use this app or, you know, whatever it may be. And then you just kind of have your little log of who, how do I connect with this person or that person? And that way that's starting that trust and that conversation back and forth.
Yes. And I love that, by the way, our whole episode could be about what you just said, because that is so important and can be very empowering for parents. My version of that, there's a template for this in the book and how to do it for free online. We make a one-page document that we make copies for our teacher and all the service providers and all the aides. It has an adorable picture of our kid and his name and his age and a condensed version of the vision statement. Here is what I love. Here is what I'm working on, you know, which is often the super condensed version of goals. Here's what works for me to motivate me. Here's what does not work for me. Here is what I love. And it's pretty, and you can create this for free online. And for us, the teachers so appreciate that because that is a starting point. And when they're having a hard day, they can look and say, oh, it's because I was trying to use these motivators. And there are three bullet points saying, these are not going to work. Oh, but singing head, shoulders, knees, and toes, that's going to work. Awesome. And in addition to having that profile page for your child that is helpful for everyone, for us, it's been so wonderful to have, we now have years worth of beginning of the school year, here's the profile page. And it's a quick snapshot of here's where my kid is. And oh, we were able to take off these, here are the things I'm working on, or the things that were hard for me aren't hard anymore. And to have a snapshot for tracking my child's progress. And it also shows like, oh, if I've had the same gross motor thing I'm working on for the last 4 years, we need a different approach. Or if, whoa, we've just blown through all of our fine motor goals in the last year. That's exciting. We're doing something that's working. And it gives you a way to more objectively look and say like, oh, progress. I have a kid who's fortunately is making progress. We've had periods of regression for sure, but overall is making progress. And sometimes it can be too easy to overlook because it is slow and gradual and over time. And there's all, like, I'm ready to cry. There's such a moment at when you make this new profile and you're looking at how far your child has come. And to just say, like, buddy, I am so proud of you. And you should be so proud of yourself. And yeah. Especially for kids who are complex communicators, to be able to say, like, here's some stuff that you've done in the last year, in the last 5 years. That's amazing. Like, you should be proud of yourself.
And I'd like to add to that, that advocacy component, that as our children, our students, as they age, wherever they are, they can start adding to that of what works well. This is what it looks like when I'm tired or overstimulated or whatever that may be. And so adding them to the conversation, which is building that capacity for, again, our future endeavors for them or for themselves. And so I think that's a really neat part of that conversation for our students. And then also having this one page really helps when there's a substitute, whether that's in specials, yes. Whether it's art or PE or the lunch lady or lunch person, I should say, and or whomever, but it just is a one shot of this so that if the primary person or the main people that are supporting a student need to step away, whether they're away all day and they have a sub or they're pulled to a meeting or whatever it may be, they have this bit of information to make it a better day for that student when they're in their care.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it's really wonderful, as you mentioned, when students can be a part of creating that. You know, your kindergartner, if any kindergartner, will probably be less interested than a sixth grader. It certainly depends on the kid. And building in that you are asking their opinion and giving them agency over their life, over their education, asking them, do they want to attend the IEP meeting? How can you participate? For my son, whose communication is emerging and making strides, but is still very complex, things as simple as, what color should your profile page be this year? And he has his device and he selects blue. He always selects blue. He loves blue. You know what? We're going to make a blue page because I am giving you a choice in your education. And this is part of your education. Hey, I was thinking about which picture to put on. Here are four pictures I have pulled up. Which picture should represent you on the profile this year? This one. Cool. Small things that we can build in. Does it really matter what color the page is? Nope, it doesn't. What matters is that I am teaching my child. I want to hear what you have to say. I will listen to you. I will do the thing. And I am building in agency in your own life, because that is the goal for all children, is to be as independent as possible. That looks very different for different kids. For my two kids, it is incredibly different. But knowing that your voice in your own life matters.
What do you say to parents who are afraid of pursuing a diagnosis for their kiddo, or who are afraid of the possibilities that their child may be labeled or be neurotypical, or there's a lot of fear. So what would you say to a parent that is just kind of trying to wrap their head around starting this process?
Mm-hmm. I love that you asked this, because this is so fraught and so many people approach this differently. There's a chapter in my book about diagnosis specifically, and we talk about this specifically because it is so important to address. And families approach it very differently based on many things, whether it's culture, experience, and also the nature of the disability. My son is visibly disabled. You can look at him and you can tell. So getting a diagnosis for him, and he has an undiagnosed genetic syndrome within all the things, never felt like, oh, here's a label. Because you can look at him and you know he's disabled. It is a difference, often a different conversation for families whose children's disabilities are not visible, especially children who are neurodivergent in whatever path that takes. Fearing a label and not wanting to get a diagnosis, figure out who are the safe people in your life to talk to about that. And again, culture and bias and experience can play into that in a very real way. Know that a diagnosis very often can put you on a path to supporting your child in their maximum success. What do I mean by that? It means it is a lot easier to get insurance coverage, to get social services, to have real and meaningful conversations with everyone on your team, your medical professionals, your school team, your caregivers. Having that language is information that can empower your child, that can connect you to caregivers in similar situations, that can connect your child to others living with their same experience of the world. As a parent, I understand very deeply the process of like, whoa, what? My kid's disabled? What? Whoa. But ignoring it or pretending like it's not there or saying you don't want to seek an evaluation. From my experience and from literally every parent I've had this conversation with, you're actually making it harder on yourself by not seeking this information. If we view disability in whatever form, not as a positive, not as a negative, it is just an objective description that equals access to services, insurance, accommodations, community. In my experience, it will help. With whom you share the information is a conversation between you, your child, to the extent they are able, respecting their privacy. Do they want you running around and telling strangers at the grocery store that they're autistic? Maybe not. Respect your child's privacy and autonomy, and also understand there is a level of access. I know from experience, without a diagnosis, there can be things you can access, but boy, it makes it easier and less expensive.
And I always say when a parent comes to me with that question is, you know, knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. Knowledge is power. Let's get all the information so that we can build around that to support a student in a way that best aligns with who they are.
Yes, yes, exactly. Best aligning with who that child is. And just because I don't have a diagnosis for my kid doesn't mean he's not disabled, neurodivergent, whatever. It doesn't mean he's not these things. It just means I haven't confirmed whatever information or suspicion. It's still there.
So when a parent does get that new diagnosis for their kiddo, what can they expect or where should they go? Like, what should they do first?
The fact that we have to ask this question is infuriating because there should be an automatic, like, here's a path. And I, half jokingly, but also not, say my book is the alternative to go home, Google, and cry, because that is what most of us get when we get a diagnosis or, hey, we should start evaluating your kid. They're like, here's a thing. Bye. Good luck with that. What?
Yeah.
Like, know that your diagnosis might not be delivered in a way that is even kind and certainly not helpful or information giving. Know that it might be messy. It might be really messy, and you might be offered zero supports. And there are parent training and information centers in every single state. It is important you get information on what is available specifically within your state, even under the same federal guidelines. The delivery state to state and the availability and all the things varies wildly. So a parent training and information center, and just Google it, you'll find the national one, and there's a button you click to find your local one that is available. And connecting with other families. And I have done this for myself and for others. I'm in Los Angeles. And my first, like, my kid has cortical vision impairment. When that was first diagnosed, I literally went home, Googled, and cried because I was given path of what to do now. Because what? By the way, if clinicians had an answer of like, here's a book and here's your parent training and information center, people would start in a wildly different place. The internet is full of whatever bananas thing you are going to find, and it may or may not be true. I Googled blind children Los Angeles and was like crying and snotty, and my kid was here and my dog was here and we were all crying. And I called the first organization, and amazingly, the woman who answered the phone was like, stay on the phone. I'm transferring you to Diana. Diana can help. And Diana was helpful. Diana's been a great part of our lives. You know, that was a decade ago. Connecting with other humans, you know, whether it's get my book from the library, buy it, parent training and information center, listening to a podcast, connecting with other humans instead of just like, I'm going to freak out and Google and come up with something on my own. That's what we all do. If you do it, no shame in that. I did it. Everybody else does it. But you are creating an amount of anxiety for yourself that you can actually avoid. So even, you know, Google cerebral palsy Indianapolis, something will pull up and connect with actual humans
that can then take the information, right? So you don't have to share your whole report, but you could just say, this is what I'm going through. And so you have some families that have sought outside evaluations. And then now the question is, how do I bring that to the school in a way that I can then start the process and the timeline to get an IEP, or through your school district, you had an evaluation. So what does that mean? And then how can I properly advocate for my child to get an IEP and to get the proper services that they need? And so that's tremendous, excellent advice, is to find somebody in your area that has a similar situation that can have a conversation of, this is what I did, this is what works best, and also having a copy of your book so that they can find the chapter that aligns with what they're doing. Mm-hmm. Really will help kind of reduce that worry and then help feel like they're having those micro wins for sure. Yes.
And also, I forgot, but should have added to this, a hugely helpful resource that took me forever to figure out. Our local children's hospital, as I believe will all children's hospitals, they have social workers on staff. I didn't actually know what a social worker does until quite recently when I was talking to one. And I was like, so what exactly do you do? All you need to know is there is a social worker at your local children's hospital that has resources. I don't know what those will be, but that will be more than you have. And that person has worked with other families and can likely set you on a path, even if that is saying, our hospital takes your insurance. Like, boy, what a relief that is.
Yes. Yes. So what do you wish you had known when you first started navigating the world of special education?
Where do I even begin? I wish I had known everything.
I wish this book was just handed to me.
Honestly, like, my kiddo would be farther along and I would be in a better space for sure. In terms of special education, that is such a big thing. I think knowing that there might not be a perfect fit for my child, my specific child is an outlier amongst outliers. Being honest about the fact that the perfect school and the perfect teacher might not actually exist is not lowering any expectations. It is being realistic and knowing that I need to be very realistic about what his rights are under the law. And I know you've talked about too, like, know what your child is entitled to and what protections, and whether that's the Americans with Disabilities Act, whether that's IDEA, which governs education, know a foundation of information so that I can properly evaluate what is out there instead of saying, oh, I wish we had this and I wish we had this. Well, you don't. So what is real that will serve my child and build from what is real? Because there are people who, there'll be people who will be a pain in the neck, but more often than not, there will be people who will be helpful and meaningful and will partner with you in this journey.
I do a lot of thinking when I walk, and I feel like that helped a lot in terms of prioritizing things of what needs to be addressed, whether that's academically, educationally speaking, or just in life. And I do share with parents that, you know, kind of write stuff down and then do a sticky note party, right? So write yes. one thing down on each sticky note and then, you know, put it up on a wall or wherever, kind of create your vision board and prioritize of what you feel would be the most support in this moment. And then kind of to that vision statement, right? Bringing it back to that of just where you can move, kind of move the needle forward and what resources do you need? And it's a really honest answer that you just put out there that there may not be a one size magical place, but knowing where to get the resources, knowing how to ask for the resources, knowing what you're entitled to, and kind of pulling that together can really benefit everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
I feel like I could keep talking to you.
Yes, I know.
You're like my new best friend, but we do have to kind of wind this down. And so let me ask my final question that I always ask. Well, I actually have two. Let me start there that I always ask my guests. What question did I not know enough to ask that I should have asked?
What all the acronyms mean?
Oh, yes. Right? Like, that could be a whole team. Podcast right there. Yes.
Oh my God. Stop your team when they are throwing around acronyms and say, hold up, I have no idea what that means.
Yeah.
Explain that to me and I will ask you again if it does not make sense.
There you go. There you go. For sure. There's just a lot of acronyms and sometimes they change and sometimes they sound like they're the same letters that mean different things. So yes. Ask all the questions. And then if you had a billboard with one tip for parents, what would it be and why?
My one tip for parents, this is a very big picture thing. This was actually originally the title of my book, which changed for many good reasons, was You Will Feel Better, because the overwhelm and this feeling of inadequacy that so many of us feel and so many of us feel is forever, especially in the beginning of our journey, before we have become educated, before we have gotten to know our kids as humans. Acknowledge and validate who you are and how you are feeling, however that is. And when you are feeling like this is all too much, know that you will feel better.
Beautiful. Beautiful. What a great final note. Thank you for joining us and sharing every little pearl of wisdom. I will put in the show notes how to get your book, and I hope everybody gets a copy and thumbs through it and just absorbs every aspect, because it is much, much needed in our world of special education. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I appreciate all that you do.
Thank you again for tuning into another episode of the Special Ed Strategist podcast. I hope you found today's podcast insightful and valuable. Before we sign off, remember to show your support by liking, sharing, and subscribing to our podcast. Your engagement helps us continue our mission of empowering families and bridging learning gaps in special education. Don't forget to spread the word about the Special Ed Strategist podcast with your friends, family, and colleagues who may benefit from our content. Together, we can make a difference in the lives of children with special needs. I am your host, Wendy Taylor, and I can't wait to bring you more inspiring content in the future. Until next time, stay informed, stay inspired, and keep making a positive impact. Goodbye for now.